Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond. Welcome to the PTSD and Beyond podcast, where we give you insights into post-traumatic stress, trauma recovery, healing, and beyond. I'm Dr. Deb Lind, and in each episode, I have a conversation with a guest who will stimulate your mind, touch your heart, and connect with your spirit, and also give you a greater understanding of yourself and others on this healing and recovery journey walked by so many of us before, wounded healers with lived experience and heroes. Hopefully, we'll also provide a glimpse into possibilities and purpose, hope, and inspiration. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. One last thing, guys, before we dive into today's episode, if you'd like an ad-free experience and like early access to new episodes and special events, I want to let you know you can join us at patreon.com. That is patreon.com/PTSD and Beyond. All right, let's do it. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond. And I've got a question for folks out there today. How safe do you feel on social media? Do you know anybody who has been a target of bullying or harassment on social media? I think we all know somebody who's been affected negatively on social media as far as the interaction with other people, as well as safety and safety protocols. And parents especially, we know that there's a lot of parents and caregivers that are out there that listen to our podcast. So what are your thoughts about safety on social media? Well, if you're kind of wondering, I really don't know. I wish I knew. No, I wish I knew something about it. I wish somebody would tell me something about it who is an expert. I got to let you guys know that today's guests, we have multiple guests today. Today's guests are from the Organization for Social Media Safety. We have Mr. Mark Berkman, who's the CEO of the organization, and then also founder Ed Peisner. And they're going to talk with us today, guys, about social media safety, how their organization got established, what types of things they provide to us to make sure that ourselves, as well as our kids, stay safe, and some more things about their mission and vision and some really cool things that they're doing. So let's give a heartfelt, warm welcome to Mark and Ed. How you guys doing today?
Doing well. Thank you.
For sure. For sure. This is a topic that is seen around on social media, but as far as people really getting diving deep and saying, okay, so what is it? What can we do? What do we need to do? I think those conversations are very, very limited, meaning in the sense of they're really not had. And then here's you and your organization actually having those conversations. So talk with our listeners a little bit about how the organization got established and about what the work that you're doing right now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, by the way, for having us on, Dr.
Yeah,
Deb.
For sure.
I'll give you the quick story here. My son, Jordan, 4 years ago at the time was 14 years old, and he was injured in a social media motivated attack. Basically, he was attacked and somebody decided to film his attack and share it on social media, where it went viral and has been seen tens of thousands of times at this point. I don't even know the number, but it opened my eyes to the world of social media and that dark side of social media that you just mentioned that we all talk about. To me, before this happened, social media was just social media. You know, there was, I didn't know much about it really. In fact, we've talked about it. I'm a parent of three kids. They all had smartphones in their hands, and my eyes were wide open after this happened to my son, and I decided to make some phone calls and find out what I could do to help keep kids safe on social media.
You know, we talk about post-trauma growth, and sometimes people wonder when a situation happens, what meaning and purpose does it have, right? If you go back to what, you know, Dr. Viktor Frankl had talked about, you know, he found his meaning and purpose through, you know, surviving the Holocaust and concentration camps. And out of this trauma, you found a meaning and purpose. Talk with us about what the mission and vision is of the company. That would be really helpful for, I think, listeners to understand, especially. It's really the heart of your company.
Yeah, absolutely. And to do that, I'm actually going to introduce my CEO, Mark Berkman, who at the time of my son's incident, what happened to my son, Jordan, I had reached out to my local assembly member, and Mark was the chief of staff for my local assembly member. When I met Mark, he had already seen the video hours after it happened. That's how quick the viral nature is of social media, right? Mm-hmm. My son was attacked, and a couple hours later, Mark had seen it. It was in his inbox in an email. I'm going to bring Mark on because if it were not for Mark and his work, we wouldn't be where we are today. So Mark, take it away.
Well, if it were not for a lot of people's work, we wouldn't be where we are today, including, of course, Ed, who turned this family tragedy into the meaningful work that we're doing now. So when this happened with Jordan, Ed's son, our office obviously was very disturbed. And there was this intuitive sense. We all knew that these videos were happening on social media in a big way. And so we wanted to do something about it and look towards legislating. And so we researched and found that going back to the birth of major social media in 2004, 2006, you found, you know, 4 to 6 of these videos around 2006. Back then, they were in the form called the knockout game, where people would walk up behind an unsuspecting victim and try to knock them out, film it and put it on social media to get these likes and these shares. Mm-hmm. To the point where in 2017, where we were, there were thousands and thousands of these videos on social media being viewed by literally millions, most of them young adults, teens, and tweens. And so what we did was we wrote a law that came to be known as Jordan's Law to deter what we now call social media motivated violence, which is attacks, as Ed said, attacks committed for the purpose of filming and putting them up on social media to gain notoriety. So we passed Jordan's Law in less than a year. It was a very quick amount of time to pass a new law. And as we were looking around, as Ed and I were talking about it, usually as a legislative staffer, you have a subject matter expert to turn to, an organization or an association. Mm-hmm. And for this particular issue, I looked and there was no one working on it. And then we looked around more, and all of these issues that we knew were happening on social media from, as you mentioned at the start, from cyberbullying to hate speech to harassment. I had previously worked in the foster youth sector, and human trafficking and social media were exploding. And this was 2016. So the misinformation and propaganda that had affected the presidential election were also becoming very clear. So we realized that there was no organization out there serving as a consumer protection organization exclusively focused on social media and combating all these dangers and how they lived and thrived within the world of social media. So we started this organization. That's exactly what it does, is we protect everyone from social media related dangers.
What's interesting is there's something that stands out, a couple of things that stands out about what you just said, Mark, is the likes and shares that folks are video recording, right? Horrendous situations in order to get likes and shares. What are, and the other thing is you've explained like the history of where things were at, say in the early 2000s, right? And so here we are in 2021. With that timeline, what are some emerging concerns? Because the other thing we know about human behavior, especially with, I want to say, the shock and awe of things, if you will. I mean, think about back in the day, there are musical artists where, you know, certain songs were considered just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that's out there, or we won't play that, to where we're at with some music today. And so things evolve over time to captivate people. It's actually almost addicting. It really does. It works in that same way if you look at experiments with animals and their continuous need for these reactions. What are some emerging things that you're seeing right now that are coming out of this, you know, the social media realm and relating to, you know, motivating violence on social media?
There's a lot of ways to answer that question, because there are emerging risks, especially we obviously, when we began this, did not plan on having a pandemic like no one else did
right.
in their plans. And the right. mix of social media and the pandemic, we're still in a little bit of a black hole evidence-wise and statistics-wise, but the mix of the pandemic and social media has seemingly exacerbated a lot of the dangers that a lot of people might be aware of, like cyberbullying and hate speech and trafficking. The initial numbers are incredibly concerning. There's one study that says that cyberbullying is up 70% during the pandemic. And we would theorize it's probably going to get worse as we all start get back to normal lives, because we're going to have to rebuild some of our social skills, particularly teens and tweens. Mm-hmm. So there's those issues. And there's also the emerging risks that people may be less familiar with, which also is a fundamental purpose of what we do as an organization, to identify those risks and figure out how to protect people and families. And so some of those include risks like deepfake technology, which is a technology that was born and bred on social media. Coda released it in 2017, recently. And this is a technology that allows anyone to take your likeness or anyone's likeness and put it into a video that you have nothing to do with, mm-hmm. and it looks hyper-realistic. And right now it's being used most often to put women's likenesses into pornographic films. So it's being used to target female women in custody battles, female journalists, female entrepreneurs. And it's really just a matter of time till it starts getting into the high school and the middle school level. So very concerning new emerging danger that we are actually working in the California state legislature with to pass some legislation to protect people on. But there's a number of emerging dangers like that. The issue of purchasing drugs on social media is getting exponentially worse almost each day. And particularly during the pandemic, we've seen kids purchase narcotics off of social media platforms that were laced with an opioid called fentanyl. And those kids are overdosing and tragically passing away. So this is also really an emerging risk, even though substance abuse has obviously been around mm-hmm. for a long time. So I could go on for the rest of our time. There's a number of dangers that continue to emerge or get worse.
So when somebody calls the Organization for Social Media Safety and they say, I want some help, what does that look like? What can that look like for folks? Especially because I can think of, I mean, I'm a parent. I can imagine that you probably get calls. A lot of people, especially right now, because of the pandemic, are wondering, you know, what are the resources out there and what help is out there? So what does that look like when somebody calls and contacts the organization and says, I need some help?
So our way of thinking about it as an organization and in our knowledge infrastructure as well, we think about it as preventative versus responsive, right? So what we call buckling the seatbelt, resources for families that are protecting them from future danger, and then responsive issues. So something has already happened. How can we help? So we'll get calls that... for children that are being cyberbullied, and we'll refer those out typically to mental health specialists or other cases of harassment and unresponsive platforms that aren't pulling stuff down. And we'll try to reach out to our contacts at platforms to see if we can expedite. More of our work is on the preventative side. So this is, of course, new to all of us as parents, because we didn't grow up with it. So parents want to know what we can do and how we can help. So we have resources on our website. Like we have a new course that we just launched for parents called the Buckling the Social Media Seatbelt Super Course, which is free on our website for parents that can sign on. Parents will also want to know how they can calibrate the safety settings on their devices and platforms. And we do individual consultations on that as well.
So in addition to helping parents with, you know, setting some of those safeguards on, you know, technology, how else does the Buckling the Social Media Seatbelt Super Course, how does that work and help parents?
So when we first got into this a few years ago on the education side, and taking another step back, the Organization for Social Media does three things. We educate We do advocacy work, so we work on public policies at all levels of government, and we do tech development, so we work on software and apps that provide real-time protection against any and all of these social media-related dangers. So on the education side, when we first started, we realized that before we started doing this work, parents really had to go hunting and pecking on the internet for a tip here and a tip there, or read a book and get a one-off tip here and there. And it wasn't helping parents because it was too scattered. The information was too scattered. And so what we did was we created a system for parents and put in that everything that parents need to know. So we have conversations, the conversations that you should have with your kids around social media related dangers. And we have a checklist so parents can go through them one by one, and that's on the course. We have the rules that parents should be implementing for their children when they get on social media. And we have the full template of rules. So we go over that in the course. And then the settings and the principles to think about when you're doing your settings. And then we also walk parents through on the course step-by-step how to set all those up. And again, we can do that individualized for families, but we also have that resource out there for free for everyone as well. So it's those three components working together make a full social media safety system for your family.
That's fantastic. You know, the acronym is EAT. So education, advocate, and tech. And what's interesting is most kids like to eat, right? And so it's probably an easy way for parents to remember, right? Every kid likes to eat. And you know what? We want to eat too. So we want to have these systems put in place. And what's really nice is it's very true. There's, you know, we can be overwhelmed by information, and to have one resource that has already done the work to put this together, a checklist, you know, again, one place where we can go to get this information. And the other thing that you touched about too was the preventative component as opposed to the reactive component. So another, you know, benefit of being on the podcast is we have over, you know, what, 54 countries that PTSD and Beyond is in. So listeners that are out there, I want to talk to, you know, the parent that's listening right now, the single parent, the person that's saying, you know what, I've got a niece or a nephew, you know, a loved one that I want to be able to provide this safety for them. All of the information is going to be placed in the summary of our podcast, all the links and everything, you know, where you can connect with Ed and Mark and learn more about the services that they offer their organization, including this social media seatbelt super course. It's called Buckling the Social Media Seatbelt Super Course. Talk with us about some of the stuff that you guys are doing as far as the advocacy work and also the legislature work. Where are things headed right now with helping to get, you know, some more advocacy and then, you know, support from government systems? I'm probably thinking that this is, you know, more global than it is national, or is it national and then with the thought of going global with this?
Well, the education piece is global and the tech piece as well. The advocacy piece is national at the moment. Maybe one day it'll be global, but our expertise is in U.S. government. So logistics restricts us to that, but hopefully people will see what we're doing across the world and replicate it. And certainly to the extent that we're advocating to reform or alter behavior of the platforms, that's also going to reverberate globally anyways, because most of these platforms are, a lot of these platforms are based in the U.S. There's certainly a ton that are international as well, I should say.
Well, we're on the radar of a bunch of different folks right now, and how we know that is through like our analytics and stuff. So the person who is affiliated with the World Health Organization, I would highly suggest, if I can say that so calmly there, that you take note and contact the Organization for Social Media Safety and reach out to Ed and Mark and ask them, you know, what's their experience, what's their expertise, and how they can help build some of these reform and education with the WHO. Because one thing that we've learned about from the pandemic is it's emerged a bunch of areas for need of assistance, mental health in particular, as well as the safety with using technology, with gaming, with games, streaming. There's, you know, you mentioned about cyberbullying, hate speech, human trafficking, you know, all of these different areas that need our assistance. So for the person who's out there listening right now that is saying to themselves, I want to bring this to my school. I want to bring this to my kids' school. What are some things that they can do to talk with the superintendent, to talk with the board, to bring your assistance into schools?
Absolutely. So we can do that virtually worldwide, and we have to some extent. Typically in the US and Canada, we do prefer going to schools, and we miss doing that. And as soon as we could do that, we're going to do that again. We've already started booking for next year. So fingers crossed that we are starting to get more back into normal life. If you are interested, what we do at schools is we do student workshops. So and Ed travels the country on an ongoing tour of the world's worst motels.
right. It's true.
we do student assemblies they range from 45 minutes to an hour plus, depending on the scheduling needs of the school. And Ed is there for the full school day, so we cycle grades in and out. And so we do the student workshops, which we know are very effective from our own surveying and evidence gathering. And we do parent workshops as well, which is an hour and a half parent education session. Then we also do school consultation after both of those, where we work with the school to enhance their policies around social media safety. And that means things like what we call community guidelines. So what we're trying to do there is create, and it's typically voluntary, we create voluntary guidelines, usually in conjunction with the parent association, to prevent this race to the bottom that we see with social media. As any parent out there knows, if you have one kid in the fifth grade or two kids that get on Snapchat, pretty soon your entire grade is on Snapchat, even though that is not an age-appropriate platform for the grade, because there's such a social trade-off there.
Yeah.
And so what we're trying to do is have all the parents come together and say, these are the platforms that are appropriate at each grade level. Here are the protocols we're going to follow when cyberbullying happens, or sexting, or sexual harassment. And so we're trying to get everyone on the same page. It's one of our most effective interventions, really.
So what are some other tips to help parents on protecting their kids from the dangers of social media? What are some things that you could share with parents?
Of course. So let me give you two of our top ones. One of our most important tips and principles to teach our kids, and this is true for us adults as well, especially in the context of this of your podcast and trauma, is the concept of blocking and reporting. And that means that if you are on social media, a variety of different types of social media as well, if you see something that is harassing or unsafe or inappropriate, from violence or sexual harassment, unfortunately a long list, what you need to teach your children to do, and also what you should be doing yourself, is blocking the poster who put that content on your feed or messaged it to you. And you're also going to report that content to the platform. And this mm-hmm. does two really important things. One, it helps all of us together, and especially teens and tweens, it helps us get the content away from the eyes of our friends and our peers and the community in general. So hate speech, you can't be anti-racist and practicing anti-racism if you're not helping to get hate speech off of social media.
Right.
So that's one important piece. The second reason is that what we're doing, especially with young adults, by teaching this, by making it a rule, hopefully making it a habit, is we're strengthening their mental defenses against the content. By actively going and reporting it each time, we are essentially repelling the content. And so with sexual harassment, with cyberbullying, it's so easy to sit there and absorb it, have it become normalized,
yeah.
have it continue to harm us. So mm-hmm. by teaching our kids to actively repel it each time, we're helping them, again, prevent that harm.
I see some parallels with the work that you're doing also with, video games. So the evaluation of, what's appropriate in video game safety. Because what I have found as a practitioner and also as a parent, and then just being out in the field, right, is this level of desensitization. I've even looked up peer-reviewed journal articles because I wanted to know, like I'm the person who's like, okay, let me go to the APA database and let me see what articles have been written that are evidence-based that can tell me, is there a correlation between desensitization and video games, right? By watching the escalation. So there was a study that was done where a person was starting off with, you know, a very basic video game, kind of like a Pokemon kind of thing, right? You see, anybody who's out there who's with Nintendo, I'm giving this as an example, not as a real example, just as an illustration. So I got to make that disclaimer, right? So they're watching it, you know, pretty happy, like a kind of cartoon kind of thing, right? No big deal. And then it moves over to something else. And the something else then adds a specific element that could be perceived as violent, but not quite, right? It's kind of like, oh, well, did I see that or didn't I see it? The mind just dismisses it, right? And then it conditions, right? It's a buildup of a condition. And with the buildup of the condition as a desensitization. And so there's probably a correlation between the cyberbullying of, you know, maybe calling somebody a jerk, right? And then it goes from jerk to something else. And then the something else goes to something else. And then that kind of snowballs into something completely different than what we first started off with. And why your work is so important, especially with kids, is to help them with an awareness. So there's an awareness-based training here of helping kids maybe take a pause and say, is that really okay? And absolutely. It's not just a movie. It's not just a video game. So like with my kids that want to watch certain movies, I actually say to them, those things happen in real life. And I don't find them to be entertaining. And as you get older, you're going to realize it and say, you know what? Yeah, you know, or you're going to know a person who that's happened to. And you won't want to watch something like that because it does happen in the real world. So one of the other things that I'm wondering about is, because we're getting ready to conclude here for a few minutes, is three key takeaways. So three key takeaways for kids, because the other thing that's wonderful about our podcast and having kids is your kids listen to your stuff and then they share it with their friends, right? And then the next thing I know, I'm getting, you know, messages, hey, Dr. Lind, I heard your, you know, and it's like there was an assignment for school. And the next thing I know, I've got all these kids, right? It's like, I think that's fantastic that you guys are listening to this. So, you know, it is wonderful that when, you know, you're doing this work and you can be impressionable with the younger generation as well as your own and beyond. So, you know, three key takeaways for the kids that are listening as well as the parents. So what are some things that we can share with those folks?
Perfect. So I think takeaway number one, most importantly, is that social media is dangerous and there are dangers on social media that can that threaten us both as adults and users that are children. So we need to be aware of that. Number two, I would say, is that given those dangers, there are steps that parents and adults for themselves can take that would mitigate those threats. And as we've mentioned, we have some of those resources on our website. And then number three is, I love the fact that you mentioned this EAT system. We're going to steal that in some way. Three, us as a society, as a culture, we need these three elements working for us if we want to think about making social media safe for all of us. And it's something we have to do because, as point number one, I mentioned, there are these dangers. They're very serious. They threaten all of us, whether or not you have children. And so we have to be thinking about how we can educate our community, how we can advocate to change the laws, to help change the behavior of a lot of these platforms. And we also have to look at tech as an answer to some of these dangers as well.
Right. Technology is part of the solution to, you know, the problem. And what's really important for parents that are listening and caregivers that are out there as well as kids is that there is a solution that provides a real-time solution that's not a pie in the sky or some clinical study. It is actual practical information and education that you can use now. And that's what the Organization for Social Media Safety is providing. as well as caring for future generations. So it's to take care of current as well as the future. So there's legacy building here with what you guys are doing. Ed, what do you think are a couple last tidbits that you'd like to share with folks that are listening today?
Thank you. Listen, it's always been my mission to turn my mess into a message, right? To make sure that no other family has to go through the trauma that my family went through and is still going through. Because again, that video is still out there and viewed by kids that are, you know, don't even like thinking about it. But take the course, take our course. And that is so, I urge every parent, because this course was not available when my kids were younger and I handed them a smartphone. There was nothing out there. I handed it to them blindly. Mark calls it, we call it the buckling your seatbelt super course, because you don't give keys to your kids to drive without teaching them and forming that habit of buckling their seatbelt. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they have to take their license test, their pre-license test and their permit test. And then they have to drive for a year provisionally. And so we've developed this course, and I urge all these parents to take it, spend the time, sit down with your kids, have the conversations. Please have the conversations with your kids. It's so important, and it will be eye-opening for both parent and child. And honestly, the course will help to reduce parent-child conflict. It really will.
I think the thing I'd like to add on there too is there's always that parent out there. And I know the person who's out there that's going to listen to this next comment is going to say, yeah, that's me. So we all know that there's one parent that's like the parent, right? They're parents to even kids that are not their kids, but everybody somehow for some reason gravitates to that parent, is always at that parent's house in the summertime, right? You know who you are. I mean, I know that somebody's out there going, yeah, that's me. Take this class, because if you don't provide that safety information for that person who lives in your heart, even if they're not biologically yours, right? You can make a difference in some kid's life when maybe they're not getting that in their own home. And I'm speaking from experience of a person who didn't have that kind of a home. So I'm grateful to people who did care and who did share about certain things, because while we step out, right, of our comfort zone and we provide that safety and security for a person, you never know what kid is going to need that, and you'll be the person who does it. You might not know it, but they'll know it. And that's what matters. That's what matters.
Absolutely.
Guys, I want to thank you so much for being on today, Ed and Mark. I really do appreciate the work that you guys are doing. This is really pioneering for social media safety. And I really do. I know there's somebody from WHO out there. So World Health Organization, level up. All right. We're going to have your information out on our website, as well as the summary for the podcast. And folks that want to go to the website right now, it is ofsms.org. That is the Organization for Social Media Safety. And their Facebook platform, as well as their Instagram. We'll also have that on the summary, guys. Again, thank you so much for being on PTSD and Beyond today.
Thank you, Dr. Deb. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. Guys, this is Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond. We'll see each other next week, eh?